Thank you for joining us for Life in Taxes with tax attorney Andrew Foster of Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law.
Because I'm the tax man.
Call now with your tax questions at 252-222-4848.
And we'd like to welcome Andrew Foster from Harvell & Collins, a.k.a. the Tax Man, in the studio. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Mike.
Well, how are things in the world of life and taxes? Here we are, August 5th, the middle of summer. Things kind of calm down a little bit, don't they?
Yeah, a little break in the action. You know, these the deadlines that have been extended, you know, are over now. So a little bit of a lull period before, you know, extended return filings would be due in September and October. So that's kind of the next thing that's on the horizon.
But those are the things we know about. Yeah. Those are the things we know about. What's happening up in Washington, D.C., what we don't know about, all the little details in the infrastructure bill, which I heard yesterday is twice, the number of pages is twice that of the Bible.
Doesn't surprise me.
Good Lord. what therein, you know, what therein lies.
Exactly. So, yeah, they're working on that one. And like we said, the infrastructure bill really doesn't seem to be one that's going to be a heavy hitter on tax reform in any meaningful way.
It's the other side of the phrase.
It's the 3.5 trillion
spending bill.
Yes, spending bill, budget reconciliation bill that we're most concerned about, because every day there's something new that comes out about what they might be trying to do with that particular bill. And it seems like that corporate tax reform that we spoke of, that we said did not make it into the bipartisan infrastructure bill, seems to be making its way back towards the $3.5 trillion
it's
bill.
Still breathing.
Yes, yeah, still breathing. So we'll see how that one ends up, you know, over the course of the next little bit. And, you know, again, slim majorities in the House and in the Senate being 50-50, you know, just razor thin. So it's going to come down to the wire relative to what gets included in these and whether or not they could even get that $3.5 trillion bill, you know, dollar bill to the finish line as currently constructed, you know, with that type of level of spending. But we'll keep our listeners up to date. What I want to talk about today, Mike, is what's called the CP 2000 letter. So we've talked about this one before.
CP 2000 letter.
2000, yeah. So this is what we call the computer generated audit. It's the way that I phrase this particular letter. And what it is that when you file your tax return, the computer does some checking to make sure that you have included all of your income on your return, or possibly have you included it on the right line of the return. So, you know, the reason I want to bring this to our listeners' attention is because I've seen a couple of these lately, because, you know, tax filings have been made and now they're, you know, the computers are doing their thing, so to speak, and they're spitting out some of these CP 2000 letters. And what the letter is, Mike, is it says, you know, we've determined a discrepancy in your tax return is the way that it's phrased. And it puts the onus on the taxpayer to make a decision. And they actually have a box on these particular forms, which is, I agree to the changes that is made to the return, or I disagree with the changes, and here is why I disagree with these particular changes relative to my return. And so that is the big threshold question. Whenever I sit down with a client who's received one of these letters, I say, okay, do you think that the change that they're proposing is correct? You know, and this can go a couple different ways.
Is it always more money? In other words, they're not going to say, we think you shortchange yourself on a return. It's always, you owe us more.
Yeah. And I mean, I've seen them adjust it slightly downward sometimes, but you know, it's a rare feat. Most of the time they're asking you to have to pay more money. And you know, the question becomes, Mike, it can go a couple different ways, whether or not we think you owe what they're saying that you owe. And you know, one example is that, oh, I forgot about that 1099, or I took some money from my retirement account and I totally forgot about it when I did my return.
That's a mistake.
Yeah. And you know, some of these 1099s, in all honesty, you get them where you have to go online, you get an email telling you go online and get your 1099.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe you forget to go do that. Mm-hmm. And so when you get some stuff in the mail, it just doesn't end up in your papers yet and get put on your return. And so if that's the case, if we say, oh, well, just an honest mistake, then a lot of times it's, okay, well, let's look at the balance due, and then let's talk about what your options are relative to, can you pay this? You know, is there a payment plan possibly an option? Is it one of those situations where you just want to put the balance on your credit card, mm-hmm. you know, heaven forbid, and have to just pay it off that way? That might be a better bang for your buck to do something like that relative to interest rates. It just all depends if we do believe that you, in fact, owe the money that's there. Mm-hmm. A lot of times what I see with these, Mike, though, is that we understand there is a discrepancy and there is some tax owed, but the question ultimately becomes, okay, the income side of things might be right, but is the tax they're asking you to pay right?
Right.
You know, and I think that I've seen one recently where we had a situation where the taxpayer and I were on the same page, which is, yeah, you didn't put this on there. You know, you do owe some tax based upon this failure to include this distribution from a retirement plan. Mm-hmm. But the number they're asking you to pay is not correct.
Not the tax rate.
Not correct. Right. Yes. And so, yeah. And so what happened in this particular situation is we have a distribution from a retirement plan that is taxable and that does incur a 10% penalty because of when the individual,
their age. And when
Of their age. They're not to the 59 and a half to be able to take it out without that 10% penalty being incurred. But they have other income that came from retirement that's not subject to a 10% penalty due to their age of retirement, et cetera.
55 or older.
Correct. Right. So we got a situation there where it's not subject to the 10% penalty. But what the IRS did is all of it is subject to the 10% penalty according to the CP2000 letter. And why is that, Mike? Well, it's a computer.
Computer generated. Artificial intelligence.
It's a computer, so it doesn't understand that, hey, look, there's a difference between these two. This one tax, you know, this one distribution is subject, and this other one is not subject.
Right.
So the onus then becomes on the taxpayer to answer the CP2000. And the CP2000 requires a quick turnaround, 30 days. Within the date of the letter. Well, we know our mail right now.
It'd be 5-7 days.
You could have about half a month, you know, maybe. Yeah,
sure.
To be able to put something together relative to this response.
Scramble.
Yeah, you got to scramble a little bit. And the thing I'll tell our listeners is that obviously you can request an extension of time. You know, the individual that I was speaking with was frustrated because he couldn't get through to the IRS relative to calling the IRS. And I said, yeah, that's just not going to get you anywhere. Unfortunately, we're relegated to just simply responses in writing relative to this notice. And then bear in mind, if you ask for that request, you really need to be able to prove that you submitted that request in a timely manner. So you want to make sure that you send that extension request
certified
mail so you can prove when you sent it that it was within the 30-day period. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing is that if you can respond within that 30-day period, you know, you want to put your best foot forward. I always tell our listeners and prospective clients and clients, you know, this is a marathon, not a sprint, you know, but it's nice if we could get this over with at this level.
Sure.
Where we send in the information and we say we agree that there's tax owed, but we don't agree that this is the
tax
correct
amount.
Mm-hmm. You know, so please, and then that goes to a person, and a person then reviews what we've submitted. And then hopefully at that point in time, we get a letter back saying, you know, we've corrected and we now believe that you only owe this amount of money, not this exorbitant amount of money. And that could be the end of it right there.
And you hope that it is.
And you hope that is.
Right.
But in the event that you end up in a situation where the individual that receives your correspondence either does not agree or maybe doesn't even care about what your response says, you know, that's not the end of the story. You know, then at that point in time, you get what's called a statutory notice of deficiency, which is we now believe that this is what you owe. And we give you 90 days to petition the tax court at that point in time to, you know, contest your matter mm-hmm. with the tax court. And as I've told many times on the show before, just because you get that letter and just because we have to go to the tax court, because that's the only way to answer that statutory notice of deficiency, it doesn't mean that you end up in court relative to that matter, because you do end up in a process where you can go through appeals mm-hmm. and deal with an appeals officer and come to a resolution absent you sitting in front of a judge, so to speak, and, you know, pleading your case,
right.
Or have me do that
with
for you.
Alongside, right?
Yeah. So a lot of times there's ways, even obviously you got to make the petition to file the tax court. Cause if mm-hmm. you do not do that, then that assessment becomes final And then that's a real uphill battle to try to get that overturned at a later date. So you really need to make sure that if you do end up in that situation where, hey, look, I tried the CP 2000 letter on my own. I didn't agree with it. I got the statutory notice of deficiency. It's saying something about petition the tax court. I have no idea what that means. If you ever get in this little situation, the best thing you can do is, you know, give me a call, shoot me an email, schedule an appointment, you know, as soon as possible so we can go ahead and plan our level of attack relative to this proposed assessment.
When someone retains you, when someone says, Andrew, I want you to help me with this, from that point forward, does the IRS correspond to you for your client, or do they still go to the taxpayer?
Both.
They go to both. So they'll they'll copy you, both of you.
Correct.
You're both on the same page.
Correct. That's exactly right. So yeah, I'll receive notices. They'll receive notices. Okay. So you both get correspondence. Sometimes I get it before the taxpayer, and sometimes they get it before me and are calling me relative to what's going on.
And they may not know really what it is, at least that you're in tune to this. This is right in your bailiwick.
You know,
right in your wheelhouse. You know the language they talk.
Well, exactly. And you got to find out what are my options relative to what I get. You know, and I think that the moral of today's story is if you get that CP 2000 letter, it's a short time period.
Yeah.
It's a computer that generated this. And so if you don't believe you owe it, don't just check the box saying I accept the changes, you know, because you think that's just what you need to do. Or don't just not respond because you're not sure what to do. You know, get in touch with me and let me help you through this process and we'll decide at what level, you know, you want my involvement.
Call Andrew Foster. If you get a CP 2000 for any of your tax needs, call Andrew Foster, 726-9050, of course, 252 area code at HarvellandCollins.com. Thank you, Andrew. We'll talk again next Thursday, Life and Taxes, with Andrew Foster.